All right, let's dive in. We're going way back in time today.
Oh, yeah.
To explore Aristotle's metaphysics.
Cool.
Book one, that is.
Okay.
And we've got our trusty Ingalls translation ready to go. The mission.
Yeah.
To uncover some early philosophical gold about, well, reality and knowledge.
I'm in.
And, you know, we don't just skim the surface here. We're digging deep for those aha moments, those ideas that really make you think.
Sounds like a plan.
So, right off the bat, Aristotle drops this truth bomb. All humans by nature desire to know.
That's pretty spot on.
Right. It's like this innate curiosity we all have.
I mean, why else would we be doing a deep dive like this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Aristotle doesn't stop there. He points to sight as our most vital sense for gaining knowledge. Because, you know, it lets us see the differences between things.
Ah, makes sense.
Observation, differentiation,
yeah.
The bedrock of science, even today.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing how these ancient ideas still resonate.
It really is.
Yeah.
And then he takes it a step further, laying out this hierarchy of knowledge. You start with sensation, then memory, which builds to experience. And from there, boom, you get art and science. It's like he's mapping out the path to wisdom.
He does make a key distinction between experience and art or science, though.
Oh, right. Tell me about that.
Well, experience is like knowing what works, but art or science, that's knowing why it works.
Okay, so knowing the how versus the why. I like that.
He gives the example of a doctor treating a patient.
Okay, classic example.
So a doctor with experience might know, say, a certain herb helps headaches.
Yeah.
But a doctor with art, or what we might call scientific knowledge, they understand why the herb works, its properties, how it interacts with the body.
So it's like the difference between just having a toolbox and actually knowing how to use the tools properly.
That's a good way to put it.
And this is where it gets really interesting to me. Aristotle claims that knowing the causes of things makes you wiser than just knowing facts.
Is that still up for debate today?
I think so. I mean, we see it all the time. The experts we truly respect, they don't just have information. They grasp the deeper principles at play, the why behind the what, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the core of metaphysics.
This book is a quest for wisdom, which Aristotle defines as understanding those first causes and principles.
He's saying we don't really know something until we get to the root of it.
So, spill the beans. Yes. What are these causes then?
He outlines four: material, formal, efficient, and final.
Okay, four causes. Go on, break it down for me.
Okay, think of, let's say, baking a cake.
Okay, I'm gonna listen.
The material cause is, well, the ingredients, the flour, sugar, eggs.
Makes sense.
The formal cause is the recipe.
The instructions.
Right, the instructions and proportions that shape that cake. Then you've got the efficient cause.
Okay.
The baker, the one doing the mixing, baking, decorating, the whole shebang.
Got it.
And finally, the final cause is the why, the purpose. Maybe it's for a birthday or just because you crave cake.
Okay, the cake analogy makes it much clearer. So is he saying to understand anything?
Yeah.
A cake, a tree, you name it. You need to consider all four of these causes.
Bingo. He's saying you got to know not just what it's made of, but also its shape, its maker, and its purpose.
Okay. I'm starting to see the bigger picture.
And this brings us to his analysis of those early philosophers, the pre-Socratics.
Oh, yes.
They were grappling with the universe's fundamental elements, basically trying to figure out the primary material cause of everything.
So, like, what everything is ultimately made of.
Exactly. And their ideas were fascinatingly diverse.
Oh, yeah. You had Thales zeroing in on water.
Right.
Anaximenes and Diogenes were all about air. And Hippasus and Heraclitus, fire was their thing.
It's like each of them saw the world through a different lens.
It's pretty incredible, the variety of perspective.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you've got Empedocles.
Right. Empedocles.
Who went with the four elements. Earth, air, fire, water. The ones we're most familiar with, I guess.
But he even recognized that these elements by themselves couldn't fully explain how things worked.
Yeah, it's like they were starting to realize that there had to be more to the story than just the stuff things were made of.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there had to be some kind of organizing principle beyond just the raw materials.
And we see hints of this in Anaxagoras' idea of reason as a guiding force in the cosmos.
Yes. And then Empedocles, with his concept of love and strife shaping the world, they were reaching for something more abstract, something beyond the purely material.
Okay, so we're witnessing a shift here from purely material explanations to these more conceptual ideas like reason and these opposing forces. And this is where the Pythagoreans come in, right? They were all about numbers.
You got it. Now things get really interesting. Hold on tight, because we're about to explore a group who believed that numbers held the ultimate key to understanding reality.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
It's like we're tracing the evolution of thought itself, isn't it?
It really is. Okay, so let's talk about these Pythagoreans. They were obsessed with numbers, right? What was it about numbers that captivated them so much?
Well, they believed that numbers weren't just symbols, they were the very essence of reality. They saw numbers as the building blocks of everything, of the entire cosmos.
Wow, that's a big claim.
It is. They even believed that numbers represented concepts, you know, like justice, the soul, opportunity.
So numbers weren't just about math equations for them. They had this deeper, almost spiritual meaning.
Exactly. And their fascination extended to the cosmos. They developed this concept of the harmony of the spheres, this beautiful idea that celestial bodies moved in accordance with mathematical ratios.
So, like, the universe is a symphony orchestrated by numbers. I love that image.
It is a beautiful idea. But let's get back to Aristotle. He was quite critical of some of his predecessors, wasn't he?
He was. He seemed to have a knack for analyzing theories, finding their weak points.
Oh, he definitely did.
But he also tried to build upon their insights to develop his own system, right?
Precisely. He was both a student and a critic, and one of the key concepts that emerges from Aristotle's work is the idea of substance.
Substance? Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, he considers substance to be, like, the most fundamental category of being, he's asking. What is the underlying reality of things? What makes a thing what it is and not something else?
So substance is, like, the essence of a thing, the core of its being.
You got it. And to understand substance, you need to understand two key aspects. Form and matter.
Oh, right. Form and matter. We touched upon those earlier with the four causes.
Exactly. But now they take center stage in Aristotle's own philosophy.
So remind me, how did he define form and matter?
Okay, so form is like the essence of a thing. It's defining characteristics, its structure, its organization.
It's what makes a tree and not, say, a rock.
Exactly. Matter, on the other hand, is the material that a thing is made of. It's the stuff that takes on the form.
Okay, so to use a modern example, if we think about a smartphone.
Okay.
The form would be its design, its operating system, the features that make it a smartphone.
Yes.
And the matter would be the metal, glass, and plastic it's made of.
Perfect example. And for Aristotle, both form and matter are absolutely essential for a substance to exist. You can't have one without the other.
They're like two sides of the same coin. I like that. But there's something I'm not quite grasping. We talked about how these early philosophers were wrestling with the idea of change.
Yeah.
Heraclitus, for example, said, "You cannot step into the same river twice." So if everything is in constant flux, how can there be a stable substance or form?
That's a great question. It gets to the heart of one of Aristotle's most important insights.
Mm.
He recognized that change is fundamental to reality, but he argued that it's not random or chaotic. Change, for Aristotle, is always directed. It has a purpose.
Mm. Okay, this is where I need a little more explanation. What do you mean by directed and purposeful?
Think about it this way. Everything exists in a state of potentiality.
Potentiality.
Yes, the possibility of becoming something else.
Okay, so like a seed has the potential to become a flower.
Exactly. Or a block of marble has the potential to become a sculpture. Change is the process of moving from that potential to actuality.
So it's going from being able to be something to actually being that thing.
You got it. And this process is guided by the thing's form, its inherent nature, its purpose. So the seed, with the right conditions, will become a flower.
And the marble, sculpted by an artist, will become a work of art.
Precisely. So the form is like a blueprint, you know? It guides what a thing can become and what it will ultimately become. And this movement from potentiality to actuality, this process of becoming, Aristotle calls it motion.
Wait, so he's not just talking about physical movement?
No, not at all. Motion, for Aristotle, encompasses any kind of change or development.
So a plant growing, a person learning, even a society evolving.
All forms of motion, according to Aristotle.
So he's broadened the concept of motion to include any kind of transformation or development. And if I understand it correctly, he's saying that all of this motion is directed, purposeful. But where does that purpose come from? What's the driving force behind it all?
This is where we get to one of Aristotle's most famous and influential ideas, the unmoved mover.
All right, we're back, ready to wrap up our deep dive into Aristotle's Metaphysics, Book 1. We've gone from that basic human desire to know, explore those four causes.
Right.
And now we're at this mind-blowing concept of the unmoved mover. It's incredible to think people have debated this for centuries.
It's a concept that still has power today. So you're curious about the unmoved mover, the ultimate driving force.
Yeah, it seems like a paradox. How can something set everything else in motion but stay still itself?
It is a paradox, one of the most debated ideas in Aristotle's philosophy. He argues there has to be a first cause,
okay,
the source of all motion in the universe. If that first cause was also moving or changing,
yeah,
well, it would need another cause to set it in motion and so on forever.
An endless loop of causes.
Exactly. Infinite regress.
So to avoid that, he proposes this unmoved mover.
Right. A being that's pure actuality, not bound by those same laws of change and motion that everything else follows.
Wow, so the unmoved mover is like this perfect, eternal being.
Yeah.
And everything else in the universe aspires to be like it.
That's the idea. It's not hard to see how this idea influenced later philosophical and religious thought.
Right. The unmoved mover could easily be interpreted as, well, God or some divine force.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, though, let's circle back to that idea of wisdom we touched on earlier.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Aristotle seemed to emphasize that wisdom is not just knowing a bunch of facts.
No, not at all.
It's about understanding those deeper causes, the principles behind things.
You got it. True wisdom is grasping the why behind things, the interconnectedness, the order, the purpose of it all.
So it's more than just theoretical knowledge. You need practical experience, too.
Absolutely. Hmm. Aristotle saw wisdom as this blend of contemplation and action, and he went further. He emphasized virtue as part of it, too.
So a wise person isn't just smart. They also live a good life. They're virtuous.
Precisely. Knowledge and virtue were inseparable for him. True wisdom meant both intellectual and moral excellence.
Wow. What a journey. Exploring these big questions that have been pondered for millennia. We've covered so much.
We have.
From what reality even is to the meaning of wisdom.
It's been amazing.
What are your final thoughts on Aristotle's metaphysics then? Why does it still matter today?
Well, I think it reminds us that pursuing knowledge isn't just an intellectual hobby. It's a path to a richer life. Aristotle pushes us to keep questioning, to dig deeper, understand ourselves and the world around us, and strive for both, well, intellectual and moral excellence.
Powerful stuff. Well, it's not just about soaking up information. It's about actively engaging with the world, seeking understanding, and living a virtuous life.
Absolutely. On that note, I want to leave you with this. If wisdom is about understanding those first causes, as Aristotle argues,
yes,
what are the first causes that shape our understanding today? What principles guide our thinking, our actions in the 21st century?
Ooh, that's a good one. I love that. It's like he's passing the torch to us, inviting us to keep exploring.
Exactly. Keep those minds curious.
So all our listeners out there, keep those questions coming and join us again for another deep dive into the world of ideas.